Parshas Noach. What's the connection between the Haftorah and the Sedra? So there is a sentence in the Haftorah that says, Ki Nei Noach Zosli. There's a difference of opinion whether Nei Noach means Ki Nei Noach, or it is the waters of Noach, or Ki Nei Noach, like the days of Noach. Shiloh, what exactly Ki Nei means. So in any case, but many Mefarshim, especially the Zohar, says that it's Ki Nei Noach, because it is the waters of Noach to me, Asher Nishbati Me'avor Nei Noach, I swore that I would never bring another flood, and again, the flood is referred to as the waters of Noah, Old Al Ha'aretz, I'll never bring another flood on the land, Ken Nishbati Miktsof Olayich U'migarbach. I also made a similar oath that I would not leave you in exile, and I would return you to Eretz Israel. I would not be always angry with you, and always diminish you. That God promised that the Jewish people would be taken out of exile, and we would be returned to Eretz Israel, Mashiach would come. There's a promise, no matter what. Just like God promised, no matter what, there never will be another flood, He also promised that the Jewish people would survive exile and return to Eretz Israel. You have to understand how it works. I mean, if God brought a flood the first time and destroyed the entire world except for Noah and his family, so how can He make a promise the next time that Mamasha, if the world deserved it again, then it should happen. If we don't deserve it, He doesn't make any promises. And how can God guarantee that we never deserve it if people have free choice? And they use their free choice the wrong way, then they can get into trouble again. What changed before the first flood that God did permit a flood to destroy the world, and after that He's not going to permit a flood to destroy the world? Again, if we don't deserve it, there's no need to make any promises. If we do deserve it, then why would God destroy it the first time if He deserved it, and not destroy it the second time He deserved it? What changed? So, I want to say that the idea is the following. There's a schus that the world has. There has to be a merit. But the merit is something that's almost guaranteed. And we'll see in 1 second why it was guaranteed after the flood and not before the flood. The merit was chesed. People will do chesed with each other. When people do kindness with each other, they help each other, then the world can't be destroyed. Why? Neither can I give neither. Chesed is kindness that's not necessarily deserved. Right? Something you do because, even undeserved. You do it because it's a fact. Not because the person deserves it, because it's a fact. That's chesed. Okay? Now, that there's always an idea of mida keneged mida. God functions with us the way we function. If we do kindnesses that aren't necessarily deserved, they're just kindnesses that have to be, that are done without because I'm doing it because you deserve the kindness. I'm doing it because the kindness is there. Then God functions without the same way. And He does things for us even if we don't deserve it. So it's possible for God to make a promise that He won't destroy the world, even if we don't deserve that. We deserve it to be destroyed because we're functioning in a way also that we do things for other people they don't deserve. We act that way, God acts that way with us. Where do you see this idea? When we don't do chesed, when we don't do kindnesses with others, then there's a place for destruction. Okay, what was the main thing why the Bible came? Because people stole from each other, the opposite of kindness. The opposite of doing for each other is stealing from each other, taking away from each other. So the Gzar Din on the decree of the Mabul, of the flood, was because of Gezel, which is the opposite of Chesed. Also, when people don't do Chesed, then God does destroy them. The people of Sodom were destroyed. Because why? They also were people who did no kindness. On the other hand, the people of the Dor HaFlod, of the Tower of Babel, they weren't destroyed. They were scattered. Why weren't they destroyed? Because there was shalom. There was peace between them. There was harmony between them. When we act in harmony, that's something that promotes the existence of the world. Even if people are wicked, but they're harmonious, then God doesn't destroy the harmony of the world. When people are wicked and they're not harmonious, when they destroy society because there's no harmony, there's no kindness, then God destroys also. Now, if that's the case, then what's the guarantee that people will always do chesed? If there's always chesed, then there won't be a destruction of the world, and God therefore promised He won't destroy the world, because there's always going to be chesed. Why? Before the flood, people were to a certain degree very self-sufficient. They ruled over the world, and every human being lived hundreds of years, and to a certain degree was self-sufficient, didn't need other people. After the flood, God diminished the world, and nothing was at its intensity. Everything was diminished. The lifespan of any one human being was diminished, so people don't live that long. People don't have the same power. They needed to eat meat, and the world was not at its strength as it was before, and therefore everybody needed everybody else. People could only exist with a cooperative, joint effort. They couldn't exist only with themselves. And that's the symbol of the rainbow. Why is the rainbow the symbol that the world won't be destroyed? For many reasons. Some of the simple reasons is the rainbow represents a bow and arrow. Like the world is, God wants to destroy the world with a bow and arrow, except the rainbow always faces away from the world. It's like the arrows are being shot upwards, not downwards. Also, there's no string. Right? It's a bow and arrow without a string, and there's no arrows. So it's a symbol that there's a reason to destroy the world, but God took the string away, took the arrows away, and faced it up so the world won't be destroyed. Another idea why the rainbow represents that there won't be a flood, because a rainbow can only appear when the clouds are not so strong that they prevent the light from going through them. What's a rainbow? Light going through the moisture in the air and makes a prism. But if the clouds are very, very thick, the light can't come through, there can't be a rainbow. So the fact that there's a rainbow shows that the clouds will never be so thick they could bring another flood. The clouds are weakened. They won't bring another flood. But there's another idea of the rainbow. The rainbow's a prism. What does it do? It takes intense white light and breaks it down into its wavelengths, into its components. Right? The various wavelengths of light, from the ultraviolet to the infrared. So that's a rainbow. What does a rainbow represent? Until now, God dealt with the world, and the world itself was on this powerful, intense white light. Now everything's going to be broken down into components. There's going to be seasons. Nothing's going to be at its full strength. And because of that, things are going to have to work together. All these colors of the rainbow make up the light. The light won't be able to be in its intensity by itself. It'll be broken down into its components, and everything in the world is broken down into its components. People won't live as long. There'll have to be cooperation between people, otherwise the world can't exist. So as long as people have to cooperate, there's always chesed. Chesed is not only when I intend to do kindness for somebody else. A person has to work for a living, and he provides a service to other people. He's doing the chesed. He gets rewarded for it, he had intention. But at least the chesed is there. People need each other. And therefore, there are going to be poor people in the world and rich people in the world. There's going to be sick people in the world and healthy people. And people are going to have to depend one on the other. And as long as there's chesed in the world, God says, I won't destroy the world. And that's why Noah is blamed for the Mabel. And what did Noah have to do a whole year in the Teva to survive? Do chesed with the animals, feed them. He was a zookeeper. For an entire year, he did chesed with the animals. That's what gave him the power to survive. And you know why the flood came? Because Noah didn't feel that connection to other people. He didn't have them. He didn't want to do them that kindness. He felt separated from everybody else. I'm tzaddik, my family's going to be saved, fine. I don't have to worry about anybody else. When you don't worry about other people, when there's no interaction between people, then that brings destruction. So the flood is called Mei Noach. It's the waters of Noach, the Zohar says, because when Noach heard that his family would be saved, he didn't feel the necessity of having for other people. He didn't feel that interaction, that interrelationship with other people. If I'll be okay, fine with me. I don't need other people. Huh? Right. To a certain degree, it's hard to. Now the Torah therefore says the same thing goes with the Jewish people. What will make the Jewish people survive? What will guarantee us that we're not going to disappear? The fact that Jews do chesed with each other. It says, "Ubechesed olam rirach richamtich." That can be understood with a tremendous kindness, I will have mercy on you. But it can mean something else too. The chesed olam, because the world will do chesed, that's why I have mercy on you. Because of your chesed, because of your kindness one to the other, that's why I'll have mercy on you. And that's what it says. There's a medrash that says this openly. The pasuk in the Haftorah says, Ki haharim yamushu, the hagvos yimutenu. Even if the mountains pass away, and the hills, right, move out of their place, chazdi me'ikach lo yomush ubrish lo milo tamut. My chesed, my kindness to you, will never be taken away, right? And the Medrash says, if you see a generation where Tus Avos, the Avos, our forefathers and mothers, were compared to the mountains and the hills. The forefathers like the mountains, the mothers like the hills. If you see that the merit of your forefathers and the mothers is gone, then how should you survive? So the Medrash says, go and do chesed. Do kindness one for the other. Because if you do kindness for one another, even if you have no schus, you have no merit. The merit of your forefathers isn't even there anymore. And the mothers isn't there. You have no merit. But just like if you'll do kindness for other people who don't merit it, then God will do kindness for you even though you don't merit it. So it's clear that that is the schus, that's the merit that keeps God's promise going. Now, Sfardim and the Haftorah with Roni Akar, that one chapter, which says this idea that just like the flood came, but God promised there wouldn't be another flood, so too, Golus came, God promised ultimately there would not never be another Golus, we'd return to Eretz Israel and we'd be there forever. We'd build a third base on Mikdash and that's it. And the Schos is Chesed. The next thing that the Ashkenazim add as the next part of the Haftorah, which is started, don't say, is Aniyah Soaru. And in there it says another idea. What is the merit that we will survive? Not just chesed, not just the idea of doing kindness, but a specific kind of chesed. The specific kind of chesed that's mentioned in the second part of that Torah is the idea of shalom, brit shlomi, that comes from Torah. Torah is the ultimate chesed. The greatest kindness you can do to the world is learn Torah, because Torah keeps the world going. Without the Torah, the world would have reverted back to tohu vavohu. So the greatest chesed, we say that in the morning, Rav Aaron Cutler points out, we say in the morning, there's a lot of chesedim a person could do. Kibud avoim, gimilus chesedim, hashkogot beis hamidrash, halvayas hameis, bikur cholim, right, hachnosus kala, all these things are chesedim. The Talmud Torah can negate kula. Talmud Torah is greater than all of them. Greater than, it's equal to all of them. So Aaron Cutler says, apples and oranges. These are things between man and man. Kindnesses, this is Torah, that's between man and God. How do you compare them? He says, no, learning Torah is between man and man. Because when a person learns Torah, he keeps the world going. If it wouldn't be, in Lobrisi, Yom of Alayla, Chuko Shemayim Horitz, or something. The energy source of the world is Torah. And if nobody would be learning Torah, the world would cease to exist. And the more people learning Torah, the more secure the world is. So the greatest kindness you can do for the world is learn Torah, because you're keeping the world going. Any other kindness is specific. This is general. This is the kindness that keeps the whole world going. So, therefore, the Torah says, Talmidei Chachamim Mardim Shalom Ba'olam. People who sit and learn Torah bring peace to the world. Peace meaning harmony. They're doing the greatest chesed. And that's what it says. With tzedakah tikkunani, with tzedakah and chesed and kindness, that's one way that the world is preserved. And the greatest chesed is that idea of hoy kol tzomei l'chulamayim. All those that are thirsty go to drink, meaning the waters of Torah. So the next Haftorah, the next part of Haftorah, describes and elucidates the first part. The first part tells us, just like God will never bring another flood, he promises the Jewish people that one day we will be taken out of exile, and we will be eternal. What's the merit? Just like then, the merit was chesed. God now put that on the Jewish people. When we'll do kindness, that will ensure our preservation. And the next part of the Haftorah adds to that, that one of the kindnesses that we can do, aside from physical kindnesses, is sitting and learning Torah, because that's a kindness that affects the entire world. So that's the connection between the Haftorah and the parasha. Okay, let's go to a few short things. We have 20 minutes, we can do a few short things from Noach Lech Lecha also. It says, you know, Yesh Darshin Lignai, Noach Tzadik Tomim Hoya B'dorosa. Noach was a perfect tzaddik in his generations. The question is, what does that come to tell me? Something good about Noach or something bad about Noach? To tell me good about Noach, that he was a tzaddik despite the fact that his generation were wicked people, and he still is a tzaddik. Imagine what kind of tzaddik he would have been had he lived in a generation of righteous people. He would have been even greater. And Yesh Darshin Lignai, some people learn this negatively. Noach was a righteous person in his generation. Compared to his generation, he was a nice guy. But if he had lived in the generation of Avram, he wouldn't have been anything. Only comparative to his generation was a big tzaddik. But he wasn't a tzaddik compared to a generation of tzaddikim. That's very difficult to learn that way. Some say that if that's the way you learn, that we're really speaking negative about Noach, that's why, in the first opinion, Rashi says, Yesh mi rabboseinu darshim mishvach. Some of our rabbis, some of our teachers learn this in a positive way. The Yesh darshim mignai, and some learn it negatively. He doesn't say Yesh mi rabboseinu. Why? Because the ones you should learn from are the ones who do it the positive way. People who speak negatively, don't learn from them. Don't make them your rebbes. That's not the teachers you should have. That's some people say like that, but those shouldn't be the ones you learn from. In any case, but it's difficult to say that if Chazal had two ways of learning, one way good about Noah and one way negative about Noah, that they picked the negative way. There's a rule, whenever you have a drasha about a tzaddik, it's always for the good. So it's against that rule. Why would there be a drasha about Noah that's negative? And that some say, because it's not to tell me something bad about Noah. It's to tell me something good about Avram. It's not Noah telling me good or bad about Noah. It's telling me Noah was great, but compared to Avram, he was nothing. So we're telling us, this drush is not telling me bad about Noah. It's the main thing, is telling me good about Avram. In any case, I want to say a different idea completely that will answer the question. Nobody's saying anything bad. Also, how can you say, the Torah says Noah was a tzaddik tum, a perfect tzaddik. You can't be a perfect tzaddik, and that should be, what's it called, relative. It's absolute. Perfect means absolute. So it can't be, well, compared to him, he was a perfect tzaddik, but compared to this, he wasn't a perfect tzaddik. If compared to something, he's not a tzaddik, he wasn't a perfect tzaddik. He was a relative tzaddik. But tum, he means perfect. You can't be perfect relatively. So was he a perfect tzaddik or not? I want to say the following. Everybody agrees that Noah was a perfect tzaddik. That's not the question. Nobody is denigrating or degrading Noah's level. Everybody agrees Noah was a perfect tzaddik in any generation. The question is, why was Noah a perfect tzaddik? What was the motivation? There are two kinds of motivations for people. Most people are affected by their society, by their surroundings, in a very direct way. If you're in good surroundings, you're a good person. It affects you well. And if you're in a bad surrounding, it affects you negatively. That's most people. There are people not like that. Right? And I knew a friend of mine way back in elementary school that he was a rebel. And he was in the Hebrew Academy, and he rebelled against everything, this kid. I mean, anything he could do wrong, he did wrong. Until it came to a point where he was such a bad influence on the other children that they threw him out of the school. And there was no other yeshiva in that city then, so he went to public school. And everybody said, this kid's going to be lost. If he was such a miserable kid in a yeshiva, imagine what he's going to be in public school, that's it. And the school threw him out, and they destroyed this kid because his kid's for sure going to go off the derech completely. Miracle of miracles, in public schools, kid began to started wearing his tzitzis out in public school, like only eating glatt kosher food, he wouldn't even eat the fruit and the thing. Why? Because he was a rebel. So when he was amongst what they called Truma people, he rebelled against that. When they sent him to the public school, he rebelled against that. That was his nature. His nature was to rebel against
the establishment.
That's it, thank you. Whatever the establishment was. If the establishment was from, he wasn't from. If the establishment wasn't from, Goyish, he wanted to be from. And the kid became a tzaddik. Why? Because he reacted as a rebel. That's the shaila with Noah. Why was Noah a tzaddik? Was he a tzaddik despite the evil of his generation? And then had he been in a better generation, he would have been better. Or no? Noah was a tzaddik because he rebelled against what his generation was. He was so disgusted with the evil of his generation, that's why he became a tzaddik. But had he been in a good generation, maybe he wouldn't have anything to rebel against, and it wouldn't have motivated him to be the tzaddik that he was. So everybody agrees that Noah was a perfect tzaddik. The question is, what brought him to that? And therefore, how would he have been had he been in a different kind of generation? Was he a tzaddik because of his generation, or was he a tzaddik despite his generation? That's the idea. Okay, let's go to something else.
Well,
yeah.
They say that two receipts to be not able to speak
on. Minimum, it could be more, yeah. Even though other Gemaras seem to say there could be only two tzaddikim in the world, there is a source that says, yeah, there are 36 tzaddikim in every generation, yeah? I assume. They don't ask me about these things. Nobody can consult me what happens. I assume that the Rebbe Shem takes care that there should be another tzaddik. Lechar, yeah. Yeah. What? Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't say they can only be 36. They're at least 36. So there's always, there could have been 37. If one dies, so there's still 36. If two die, then the Rav Anshan prepares that there's somebody waiting in the wings that that could reach that level or whatever.
My question, your subject.
Yeah. Yeah.
This Talmud who takes his place, one person in a big Talmud, and one who just died, and then maybe because of the fact that he was a Talmud prepared on the duration he was living in, and then he was able to take the place of the Emperor.
That could be, which I hear what you're saying. In other words, he was on a level, not of what the tzaddik, the highest level of the tzaddik, but for some reason, after the other one died, he became like that. That could be. But it's not that there's only 36. The minimum 36. There could be 38 too. What? What's the meaning of 36? Okay, since you asked about that. The, 36 has a, there's something else that's 36. Anybody even know what it is? That the sum total of something is 36. Huh? Lamed hei what? No, okay, that's what we're talking about, 36 Sadiqim. How many Hanukkah candles do we light over the 8 days? Right? 44. That's what it says on the box. But that's not true. That's with the Shamas. Take off 8 Shamasim. How many candles are there? 36. Why add? 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 6 plus 7 plus 8, 36. Okay, so now we know that there are 36 Hanukkah candles too. We still have the same question. What does that mean? There, we mentioned before, there was a special heavenly light which was at the beginning of creation and lasted until Motzei Shabbos of creation. And then the Motzei Shabbos of creation, God took away that light, hid it away for the tzaddikim in the future. It won't come back till Olam Haba, and some say it's hidden in the Torah. The light of the Torah is that supernal light that existed at the beginning of the world. That was called Or HaGanus. The light that is hidden away, right? The Or of Shiva Simei Bereishis, the light of the first 7 days of Bereishis. Now, Adam HaRishon was created on Friday, okay? And he was in Gan Eden, Shabbos, okay, all day. And most of Shabbos he was thrown out of Gan Eden, and the light was taken away, and he had to make fire. That's why we make a bracha on fire, Motzei Shabbos. Comes out. How many hours, okay, was that light around when Adam HaRishon had a connection to it? 36. 12 Friday and 24 on Shabbos. There were 36 hours of that supernal light. The Hanukkah candles represent that light, and the 36 tzaddikim also represent that light. I'm glad I knew it. The only ask questions are things I know. The...